Hello, ramblers and gamblers. Josh Rosenthal here. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing IG at Rambling and Gambling and the old email, ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Man, was it fun having football back? I had both my brothers over, cracked some brewskis. We watched everything the whole day. The best bets that were given out on last week's RNG pod by Raheem Palmer and Brandon Anderson both hit. We're 2-0 to start the year. That was awesome. The missus made buffalo chicken dip. That was awesome. We were trying to potty train my kid. It did not go very well. Didn't even care. Commanders got a win. The 1 p.m. games were amazing. Overall, my 8 million fantasy teams did quite well. I know I'm a gigantic nerd, but that was great. Love, love, love that football is back. See if we can keep it rolling into week two. Three interviews today. Mark Burns of Morning Consult is coming on at the end to talk about the big business of fantasy football. That's a really interesting one. Our guy Ben Standig of The Athletic is back to do like 10, maybe 15 minutes on the Commanders. Sorry for that, non-DMV listeners, but let's be real. I don't get the chance to say positive things about my team all that often, so I'm milking it. And then we're kicking off the pod with another friend of the pod, none other than Andy Molitor of BetSperts. He's back. He and I are breaking down. We'll do three or four games in detail, probably three. So we've got a lot going on in this pod. He's going to give us his best bet of the week, cash or trash, and as you're about to hear, a little talk about the Minnesota State Fair. Here's my interview with Andy. Andy, my man, pleasure to have you back on the pod. Also, I should mention, I just not too long ago got back from your great state of Minnesota. I was there. I saw a little bit of family, and I made a quick trip to the always very interesting Minnesota State Fair as well.
Yeah, I almost stopped by. We actually had a family vacation up north. I'm guessing that's where you were too. We were over by Duluth though. And as we were heading down through the Twin Cities, I'm like, God, it's State Fair time. And I just, after a week of vacation with the kids, I'm like, I don't know if I can stomach a day at the fair right now. So I didn't make it this year, but yeah, great Minnesota get together. Always a good time.
For people who don't know, the Minnesota State Fair truly is an experience unlike any other. I believe it's the top one in the country for per day attendance. The Texas one goes longer, but it's just massive crowds. By the way, you know what was amazing? What food I like? Because I'm not really a fair guy. My wife drags me kicking and screaming every year. Pickle pizza. It was new this year. It's from this place, Rick's. It was like dill pickle pizza. It doesn't even sound good. Let me tell you, it was delicious. If they had it here in Maryland, I would order it for like a football Sunday. It was great.
Yeah, always some unique foods up there. I've had some good stuff, but we do the county fair. So, I did the county fair. It's not enough fair for me for the year.
All right. Well, I guess we should talk a little football on this podcast as well. Let's do a few games here. I'll set them up. Give the odds, and then you just take it anywhere you want to go. First up, this is a Monday nighter. We're sticking with our Minnesota-themed podcast here. The Vikings are taking on the Eagles in Philly. As of Tuesday afternoon, FanDuel has the Eagles as 1.5-point favorites. The over-under is 52.5. Second highest total of week two, by the way. A couple notes. Both these teams, 1-0. Vikes beat the Packers. The Eagles held on against the Lions. And I'll get you started with this, Andy. I thought it was telling. After the game, longtime Vikings receiver Adam Thielen says, "I've never been part of an offense that was just attacking and attacking and attacking. Didn't matter the score. Didn't matter the situation. We were attacking. It felt good." What do you think of this matchup?
Yeah, I love this one. This is one, too. And I spent last weekend in Las Vegas with a bunch. I got to see a ton of people I talk football and other sports with. And Drew, my podcast partner in the deep dive, him and I were sitting there on Sunday, mostly with it. And we said that I think the total on this game was 47.5 on the look ahead. And I mean, we watched the Minnesota offense in the first half. We watched the Philadelphia offense. Said like, what does that reopen? I said anything like, you know, anything under 50 is probably a bet to the over. There was some 49s right away that opened. I grabbed, you know, the limits are lower, but I did grab a good chunk of 49 to the over, so that's silly. So feeling good about the CLV, though, that doesn't get you the win, but man, they did open that quite a bit lower than I thought they would, with both of these offenses really looking good. Even with Hurts is, you know, he missed some passes, but still he brings another, you know, dimension to the game with his legs, and AJ Brown doing his thing. Like the Eagles, both defenses were a little underwhelming at points, and you can say, well, how do you say that about the Vikings? They only giving up 7 points. Like the Packers really, really didn't have much going on offense. Their EPA per play was horrid. Rodgers had the one play where the rookie, I think that was the first play from scrimmage, maybe, that basically they had a touchdown that was just dropped. Other than that, there weren't a ton of plays that impressed me with the, you know, ragtag wide receiver core that they put together. So the Minnesota defense looked good in the final score, but I don't think it'll be as well. It's funny how going from Aaron Rodgers to like a second year guy, I'm like, oh, now I'm worried that the Vikings defense is going to get exposed a little. I would lean Eagles here. I think this number should be maybe a little closer to 3. I don't think that highly of the Minnesota defense, but on the other hand, the Eagles did lose Derek Barnett. That's a year thing. That was an ACL tear. So a little bit of problematic for both defenses. And again, I think this overflies. I'm not sure how I feel about grabbing it at this bigger number. And again, it is another one that falls into that teaser zone where people can get through the 3 and 7, but with a higher total, that's a little sketchy too. I think if you like Minnesota at this point, it's just to bet them straight up to win. Take, you know, plus 110 or something like that. I would lean Eagles, as even though I'm a Minnesota guy, I do have some Eagles exposure. I think to be top seed, to win the NFC, a few little bets like that, that we just really liked what the roster they put together for preseason here.
Last week was Justin Jefferson's 5th career game with at least 150 receiving yards. You probably know this. You want to guess the only other receiver to have more than that? He has 6 at age 23 or younger.
I mean, was it just Moss?
Randy Moss. Yeah, it's the only one, man.
It's,
yeah.
It's shades of 98. And yeah, he is another one that I took some swings on him at Offensive Player of the Year. So lovely, lovely start for Justin Jefferson. He looks great. And even with, you know, like they said, Minnesota attacking on offense, they ran a bunch on first down. A lot of it was with the lead. Like if they're in a game where it's a little more competitive, it might even be more of an attacking offense. I would love to see just a wild Monday night game with some high scoring, high flying antics from both offenses here.
Yeah, I think that's going to be one of two, hopefully really entertaining games this weekend. The second one, let's talk about it now. I normally leave the Thursday game out of this section because I know a lot of people listen to the pod towards the end of the week. But this game is just too good. I couldn't leave it out. The Chiefs given 3.5 to the Chargers in Kansas City. And this game has the highest total of the week, all the way up at 54.5. Both teams won in week 1. Chiefs making easy work of the Cards. The Chargers knocking off the Raiders. Andy, what do you think of this one?
Yeah, another one. God, there have been a ton of injuries already. Like the Keenan Allen injury probably looms a little large here. This is a team that even with I was a little worried about Mahomes. He had some tape on his hand, didn't look any worse for wear. Obviously, the Cardinals probably had the worst injury luck as far as heading into week 1. They had a rash of injuries. They were in a bad spot to begin with. That number got bet from like 3, 3.5, all the way up through 6. So, I mean, that move was correct. The Chiefs offense looked great. A lot of what the Cardinals did was in a very low win probability game state where, you know, for lack of a better term, garbage time started early in that one. So it was hard to grade what I feel about Kansas City's defense. That was the biggest question mark outside of what will we get from these wide receivers. I think that was answered. The wide receivers, you know, you can never replace Tyreek Hill, but they seem to have a game plan and they seem to have figured out how they want to use, you know, the wide receivers, CEH, and then obviously Kelce isn't hard to scheme into the game plan. So this offense looks just fine. This is a total that's moved up to. I still think the total might be low. Like I would play. I would still play in a, you know.
You would play over 54.5.
I still, even if it got to, you know, there's some 54.5s out there. It's a silly little wrinkle too, but I don't think Harrison Butker's playing. He's not practicing. I think they have the practice squad quick kicker. They're already a little aggressive. So there might be some situations where they're going for seven instead of three anyway. And that might just help things along. So I lean Kansas City and the over, which is tough, but you lose Keenan Allen, you go play at Kansas City. It's both games last year. I think it was a split. I think they're both close, and maybe even an overtime game. Justin Herbert's great. What we saw from the Chargers is great, but man, this is a whole different offense from kind of a disappointing Vegas team. I was a little disappointed in what we saw from them. I thought they'd score more. That was a loss on the old card. I had the over 52 in that game.
I hope you're right about the over, just because it'd be a really entertaining game to watch if it does hit. By the way, it's 1:03 p.m. Eastern right now, and Tuesday when we're recording this. I think Andy Reid actually just wrapped up his press conference for today, and he said that Harrison Butker, the kicker with an ankle sprain, is day-to-day. So definitely something to watch. You made a good point with him there. Let's do one more of these, not necessarily because I think it'll be the best game, but because I think there's a lot of interesting stuff to talk about with this one. The Bengals, 6.5-point favorites in Dallas against the now Dak Prescott-less Cowboys. Totals 43.5. Both teams lost in week one. Bengals, of course, losing in OT against the Steelers with Burrow throwing 4 interceptions, and the Cowboys got crushed at home against the Bucs. And I'll mention, as far as the Cowboys getting crushed, I thought this was a good one. The Cowboys, 3 points in week one. That was their second fewest points scored in a season opener ever. The only time they scored less than that in a season opener, you have to go all the way back to 1989, which happened to be both Troy Aikman and Jimmy Johnson's very first game. It's been a while, Andy.
Yeah, geez, that was a wee child back then. Yeah, as you say, 89, that was a heck of a year for rookies. Sanders, Aikman.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an offense we expected to struggle last week. It was a team total under. This team total was like 24, 24 and a half. Not really a sweat. Of all the bets I made last week, probably the least sweaty. And I remember partway through the game texting someone saying, if this is what the offense looks like, I'm probably going to look at even an adjusted Cincinnati number next week. And then, of course, the Dak Prescott injury absolutely ruins that market. It just it probably made the right adjustment out across the seven. But That's a big adjustment. The Cowboys have come out and said, we're not going to make a play for a fill-in. Right away off the bat, we looked at like who's out there for free agents. It's desolate. Like, it's Cam, it's Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's 39. Like, there's just not that much. You could see maybe a trade for a backup, but I don't see the Niners helping them out. I'm not sure if that's a move you want to make anyway. The interesting thing of the whole deck scenario is, it sounds like the Cowboys are really excited to rush him back after this, which never goes well when it's a hand injury for a quarterback. Go see Russell Wilson last year when he came back way too early. So Cowboys are kind of in bad shape, which again helps my Eagles stuff. Anyone who has long shots on the Commandos or your G-man up there, like, there's that division, like always, has turned into madness. On the other side, T. Higgins, concussion protocol, something to look for. They have depth at wide receiver. They have 3 really good receivers. So maybe not the biggest problem. His fill-in actually had some nice catches. We won't know on that till Thursday, I think, is the earliest he can play with the protocol. But like I said, this number is probably right. The total's down at 43. The play I made on all of this was Cincinnati to win the division at 3-1 after the loss. I don't think I'm worried about Burrow. I think he's going to be just fine. I don't know if maybe the lack of prep time he had with the appendix thing, missing some time, losing a little weight. I don't know if that's probably overstating some of that. It's just a divisional foe right away, and everybody has bad games. I think he's going to be just fine. I think this team's going to bounce back. Obviously getting a game where they were kind of right in that pick'em zone before it. Now they're a massive favorite. That helps. You get to play the Jets in a couple weeks. You get the Ravens to really, you know, that'll be nut cutting time to see if you can overtake them. But 3-1 is probably a bit too much of an adjustment just off one divisional loss. So I played Cincy to win the division. And then it's another one too, where it depends how you feel about this. Cause it is a road team, but it is a probably a really good teaser leg. The total is low, so you can end up with a lot less variance. And man, what we saw of the, I mean, that Dallas offense looked bad with Dak in. This is going to be a Cooper Rush led offense. I'm not sure how, you know, road favorites aren't always the best to put in a teaser. They're one of the least successful of the four ways you can do things, but it's probably a teaser leg I'm going to fill out with Cincinnati here, getting them down through the 7 and the 3, and just hoping the Dallas offense looks absolutely stuck in mud again.
I like that leg a lot, and also good call. I gave out a stale line mistakenly at the beginning of this. It was 6.5. I think as recently as maybe it was last night, but now it is 7.5 in most places. So like you said, if you're teasing the Bengals, you're moving them through the 7 and the 3, and then you're getting them at, you know, 1.5, assuming you're doing a 6-point tease. Also, I want to mention here, have you seen what happened to the NFC East odds after week 1 and the Dak injury? This is kind of wild. I believe going into week 1, Eagles and Cowboys were essentially neck and neck to win the NFC East. Now, the Cowboys are last odds-wise. It's, what is it now? Again, this was as of last night, I believe, so Monday night. Eagles minus 150, Commanders plus 460, G-Men 5-1, Cowboys all the way down at 6-1.
Yeah, and I mean, it just, in if you say, let's say, best case, Dak only misses 4-5 games, and the Bengals, you're a touchdown dog, and you head to the Giants, and I know that it's not the best team, but I mean, that's a road game. You're going to be a dog there. Washington comes to town. Depending how Rush is playing, that's a game you're not going to be favored in, or if you are, it's going to be close to a pick 'em. And then you go to LA to play the Rams. Should be a sizable dog there. You go to Philly to play the Eagles. That might be your game that you get Dak back, but I really don't think that's happening. There's a decent chance this Cowboys team is just like 0-6. Like that, at that point, you know, it doesn't matter what the division odds are. It's a really big hole to dig out of. It feels like 1-5 is like your median outcome here. And boy, howdy, like, yeah, that's what happens when you lose a star quarterback, I guess. And I know some people with some nice odds on the Giants to win the division, 10-1 or better. And, you know, some of that stuff is absolutely live when you lose one of the good teams like this.
Before we move on, Andy, big question. I know a lot of listeners are waiting on this one. I want to know, what is your best bet of the week? Can be from one of the games we talked about. Doesn't have to be. And no pressure. We are 2-0. In this category, we had two experts both hit in week 1. This is the bet that I normally put on TV on our Sunday morning show on Fox 5 DC. So no pressure, man. But, you know, a lot of people are counting on you here. What is your best bet of the week?
You know, I might have to just go with that, since all my bets I made on Sunday, I've made 4 bets and they've all just moved so much. Like up on the Washington game, I took an over on that one, 46.5, just a hilarious line heading to Detroit. Like, and you can see that total's moved up 3 points. So I don't want to give out something that's not available, but that Cincy teaser, you gave me a little more confidence in that. I actually came into this not 100% sure what I was going to say for best bet. I was just going to kind of roll with it, but maybe an AFC North black and blue teaser. At Cincy, you tease them down through the 7 and 3, get about, you know, -1.5, do a 6-point teaser, and then link that up with Pittsburgh. If Dallas, I was cold on the Dallas offense, I'm equally cold on what's going on in New England. So you're getting Pittsburgh as a home dog against a New England team that looked just horrible on offense at times. And I get it. It's Mitch Trubisky. It's maybe not a team that people were hoping to back a lot this year, but getting them at a dog price at home against a New England offense, it's like this could be a teaser leg where I'm not sure, you know, Pittsburgh needs to get to 10 points to cover this teaser leg. This could be a horribly, horribly ugly game. So taking that, the opposite of it, taking the Pittsburgh line up through the 3 and the 7, getting that out to 7.5. So yeah, AFC North teaser is, I couldn't get my teaser legs home last week. I had the Rams in one that didn't help me out. Obviously the Vikings were my favorite leg, but it doesn't work if you don't get bowls. So thanks for nothing, Rams. This week we're going to be better.
That was my, that teaser was my cash or trash pick, which was the next segment we're about to do. And I had Rams Vikings and I lost on the Rams leg as well. So I feel you there, man. And also I bet the Pittsburgh, I took them straight. Actually, I couldn't understand why they were.
Yeah,
I couldn't understand. Is there anything that you like as a straight bet for our Fox 5 DC audience that is not always as clued in as our rambling and gambling listeners by any chance?
You know what? It's come down through the four, but Miami at +3.5 is still bettable, or just straight up if you like that. Like the Baltimore, maybe a bit of an overreaction. Lamar had one pretty nice deep pass, but otherwise they played a pretty bad team. Like you're always going to have a little bit of an overreaction to beating the pants off somebody like that. I don't think Baltimore is as good as maybe they're going to be made out to be. That another reason why I bet Cincinnati to win the division. They also lost a corner. Yeah, and they're already down a corner. So they're going to have a tough time covering these Miami receivers. I like certain things that we saw from Miami. I think the offense is going to be towards the higher end of, you know, their range of outcomes. Everyone was like, what's Tua going to do? And I'm never a big Tua believer, but if he fixes some things, there's so many pieces around him and they really kind of went all in. So Miami should probably be on the other side of three, honestly. So getting 3.5 here, I think this is going to be a close game and they're live to win. That's a good best bet. I'll take the Fins here on the road.
All right. I like it. And I also very much
Charm City there.
I also very much appreciate your flexibility, Andy. You are a gem as always. All right, it is time for a segment we like to call Cash or Trash. I think you did this with me last season. I couldn't remember, but real simple. I'm going to tell you a bet I like. I'll tell you why I like it, and then you tell me if it is cash or trash. Sound good?
Yes.
All right, I'm 0-1. In this section so far this season because of that Rams Vikings teaser. Rams leg lost, Vikings leg won. For this week, I'm going with the Green Bay Packers -9.5 at home against the Chicago Bears. Now I get it. The Packers looked awful against the Vikings. Davante Adams is gone. Meanwhile, the Bears pulled off kind of a sloppy upset over a team most of us thought would be pretty good in the Niners. However, Aaron Rodgers doesn't just own the Bears. He owns the Bears. These teams play at least twice a year. Rodgers hasn't just won. He has covered this 9.5-point spread each of the last five times these teams have played. You've got the Bears likely feeling pretty good about themselves right now after that win last week. Whereas the Packers, they've got something to prove here. They can't lose two division games back-to-back to start the season. It would be unheard of in Green Bay. Not to mention, they have been here before. Remember, the Packers lost game one last season only to come back and cover as a heavy favorite in week two. Because remember, they lost to the Saints 38-3 in week one last year. And then obviously Rodgers goes on to have an MVP year. The Packers are a really good team. So I am taking Green Bay -9.5 points. Andy, please pause after you give me your answer and before the explanation so that we can put in cheesy sound effects that we love to do on this podcast. Is this one cash or trash?
You're putting me in a really tough spot as a very nice Minnesotan because I like you, but I bet Bears +10, so I have to say trash.
Wow, you actually took the other side. All right, I love this because last week the guys both told me it was cash. And it didn't hit. So maybe I got some reverse juju going on here. Why are you taking the Bears +10? Why are you giving me a trash here?
It's just a number play. It's another one where it's like, man, I don't want to be betting on the Bears, but 10 is an awful lot in a divisional game for a team that they didn't do a lot to help out their young quarterback in the wide receiver room, in the offensive line room. They won a fluky game that was, you know, very, very much affected by the weather against not a first-time starter, but basically with Trey Lance, he didn't get a lot of action last year. They're missing George Kittle, so maybe downplay that win quite a bit. But I saw some nice things from the defense, especially in the red zone. Roquan looked good. It's just there are some things. I think this is probably a better defense than Minnesota has, and I don't see Green Bay losing. But to win by margin is tough with the kind of offense that Green Bay is going to run. It is going to be highly based around both of the running backs. Even in the passing game, I think they're going to continue to use those guys. So it was just a bit of a numbers play for me. I think there's going to be times that Green Bay is covering this, but I see it coming down to about a touchdown, and my numbers would have this closer to like an 8. So it felt like a gross click for me, but I have a little bit on the Bears plus 10.
All right. Very good. I'm worried for my bet, but I kind of like the different takes here. That's good content, my man. Do you see either of these young Packers receivers stepping up this year, putting up numbers, either Dobbs or Watson?
I mean, Watson beat Patrick, and Patrick Peterson's like our age. So, I mean, what are you going to do? He's no young man, but I mean, Watson beat his pants off on that play. And I mean, Peterson came out and just said, I didn't expect him to go deep there. So maybe people will be a little surprised if the Packers pull some of those things out, if, you know, they're expecting a little more of a plodding offense. But I mean, they look good at times. They look good in camp. They just got to get on the same page as Rodgers. And I don't know if you play, you know, Minnesota did play a slightly different defense than what they were playing last year. And I guess it just sort of worked against a Green Bay offense that I'm still kind of low on. So they have the potential. We saw it in camp. We saw it in preseason. But, you know, Rodgers can be kind of finicky about who he throws to, too. And it might just turn into a bigger target share each week for these running backs, who I think he has a little more trust in. And I don't expect both of them to click, but maybe one of them does start to build a bit of a rapport with the old quarterback there. I'm trying to think of a nice way to put what he's turned into with his weirdness about with the ayahuasca and, you know, dating a witch and all that stuff. He's it's been a weird offseason for that team in general.
Yeah, I'd say so. Great stuff as always, man. What do you want to plug? Take as much time as you want. Go for it.
Oh, just everything. The deep dive. We had like I said, I didn't want to give out stale lines, but boy, howdy, if you want to hang out on Sunday night, we do a live stream an hour before the Sunday night game starts. So kind of in the tail end of those 3 o'clock games. We call them 3 o'clock games here in the Midwest. I know it's a little later for the East Coast, but so 7:20 Eastern, we start a live stream and we just start betting openers. We've got some nice value on some early numbers there. Drew, I think, got a Miami plus 4.5. So that's a fun one. Every Wednesday, we go through the entire slate at 8 Eastern on the deep dive. That's a fun one. Then I'm also doing, like I said early on, I'm doing golf betting content every week still. It is the swing season. We are not heading to Augusta, Napa Valley, California instead. But you know what? The money's still green. It's like people make fun of people for betting on Little League or hot dog eating contests. Like, yeah, the money you can win is, it spends the same as betting on the Super Bowl. So we will be betting golf every week over at betspurtsgolf.com is where all my stuff is over there as well.
Andy Molitor, director of content for BetSports Deep Dive Pod. Please say hi to Drew for me. And, you know, let's get pickle pizza together sometime in Minnesota, my man. Good luck in week 2.
Yeah, thanks a lot. You too.
Joining me now, a fellow rider on the emotional roller coaster that is rooting for Carson Wentz, the Athletic's Ben Standing, beat writer for the team. How are you feeling after that doozy of a game 1, man?
Yeah, my rooting interest in Carson Wentz is from an entertainment standpoint. Like, the one thing I know about him going into this year is I don't know if he'll be good. I don't know if he'll be bad. I just know it's going to be fascinating because he's such a polarizing guy. And as we saw on Sunday, the lows are going to be there. He's going to make some throws. You're just going, what is happening? And then he's going to make the throws like he did in the end of the game with those 2 touchdowns. You're like, oh. Now I get why they got him. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. And week 1 was definitely that.
I love the comment that you got from Coach Rivera. I believe you asked him how he's going to handle the Carson Wentz roller coaster ride all season. Right. And what did he tell you?
He's like, yeah, I'll take antacids.
He's going to need them. I think we're all going to need them, right?
100%. I mean, in the fourth quarter alone, Wentz threw interceptions on back-to-back plays. You know, give the defense credit for making some good plays, especially on the second one to Trayvon Walker, the first player picked in the draft with an incredible read. But the first interception, Wentz was late to the outside. And then Jacksonville takes an 8-point lead, and Wentz comes back, throws a perfect 49-yard touchdown to Terry McLaurin, then drives the team 90 yards for the go-ahead touchdown, a feed to Jahan Dotson, his second touchdown. And that was just the fourth quarter. That alone for a game would have been like, okay, that's a lot. And that's just the Carson Wentz experience. It can go in any direction at any point. And, you know, you're just going to have to hope he can make enough good plays to offset some of the clunkers.
Something I thought was interesting that I caught because of your reporting, I believe Coach Rivera said that Wentz took responsibility for the interceptions in the locker room after the game, which doesn't seem like a big thing. But as you wrote, fair or not, the rep on Wentz, whether it's true or not, has been that he has failed to take responsibility in pass stops, correct?
Correct. I remember in the preseason game against Kansas City on the final drive with Wentz in the game, they had moved the ball into field goal range, and on third down, he takes a sack that knocks them out and probably could have got rid of the ball sooner, that type of things. Afterwards, he said he recognized where he needed to be, but that the instincts took over and he just kind of tried to make a play that wasn't there. Things happened, but, you know, it was kind of, you know, on him. And I was talking subsequently to somebody who was with one of his former teams and said sort of like, you know, that may not seem like a big deal, but if he actually is sincerely saying my bad, that would be a step in the right direction for where he needs to be. And I think that's the thing always about any of these athletes, I mean, you know, really any of us, the idea of improvement. I mean, hopefully all of us are improving over the course of our lives and whatever that means for us. So it should be no different here. He just happens to be in this incredibly heightened position of interest and a lot of pressure on any NFL quarterback, any player, but really the quarterback. And so if he is able to make that adjustment to recognize, hey, I've been in this situation, something is going on with me as well, that would be pretty huge. And Ron Rivera seemed to acknowledge that. And, you know, I'm sure Ron Rivera is a smart guy. He's aware of the criticism. So I think he did that perhaps a little bit on purpose as well. But nonetheless, you know, good sign there based on the reputation that he had, fair enough.
Jahan Dotson looked every bit as good as advertised, scoring two touchdowns, including the game winner, which was an incredible catch. And this after I felt like he was kind of the forgotten man among the first round wide receivers. It seemed like everybody else taken in the first round had a lot of hype going into the season, but not Dotson. And then he looks amazing in week one. What do you think his ceiling has been just for this season? Not his whole career, because obviously he's got a bright future ahead of him, but for this season, what's his ceiling?
It's a great question. I mean, I think in general for Washington, one of the interesting components will be, it's a weird thing to say for this offense, how do you get all the weapons they have involved? You've got three looking like dynamic receivers with Terry McLaurin, Curtis Samuel, and Jahan Dotson. You've got Antonio Gibson, J.D. McKissic out of the backfield who can catch a lot of passes. Eventually, Brian Robinson will return from his circumstance. And you have Logan Thomas at tight end. That is going to be a problem for defenses. And we saw in week one, how, you know, Jacksonville, you know, it was hard to contain everybody. So to that end, there may be games where Dotson is a main guy. Again, he had two touchdowns this week. Maybe other games where he's less of the main focus. But I think in terms of just whatever his stats will be, I think he's going to be a presence. He is poised. He's a really good route runner. We've heard a ton about his catch radius, his ability to kind of grab onto the balls no matter where they're thrown in his direction. All that is played out to be accurate based on everything I've seen in practice in the preseason and in week one here. So I think his ceiling right now is pretty high for this year. Again, I don't necessarily know what that would mean for the fantasy football people out there, but obviously I think he's pretty intriguing. And, you know, always the key is the quarterback feel confident throwing in this guy's way. And I thought during training camp, Wentz had more of a chemistry with Dotson than any of the other receivers. So, you know, I he's not going to catch two touchdowns every week, but I see a guy who's going to be productive, you know, more often than not.
Another receiver who also looked good, Curtis Samuel, the 8 catches and a touchdown alone were somewhat unexpected just given his injury history. But I was kind of surprised to see him get the 4 carries too, including one, at least one, I believe, after a fumble. I realized Samuel in his last year in Carolina got, I think it was like 40 something carries. I looked it up over the weekend, but given his injuries and what happened last season, I was surprised to see him log 4 carries in this one. Do you think that continues throughout the season?
I do. I mean, obviously, hopefully he's, you know, able to stay healthy, but yeah, this is what's interesting about Samuel. You know, Debo Samuel in San Francisco is sort of the epitome of the the receiver running back hybrid, and he's a little bit bigger than Curtis Samuel, but Samuel was a running back when he went to Ohio State initially. He's got those instincts. They obviously were without Brian Robinson, so you know they probably felt they needed a little bit more variance on the, in the ground game. And you know, I know they want to keep Antonio Gibson in this sort of new role they see for him, where he's more in space and trying to run a lot up the middle. But yeah, I mean, I think what's so interesting about this offense is all these pieces are very interchangeable, that you can use them in so many variety of ways. And, you know, I remember when they drafted Antonio Gibson, who was a receiver in college, then turned running back, so the opposite of Samuel, that they basically said the whole point of this is if Gibson's in the backfield and the defense is playing, you know, a 4-3 run defense kind of look, they can pivot to a pass. And if they're going with a nickelback situation, five defensive backs, they can pivot to a run. Samuel, to a certain extent, would be the same way. And I think that's what makes this offense so intriguing, is that they do have a lot of these versatile pieces, and they now have a quarterback that they can really open up the playbook. It isn't just limited to, you know, more just basic quarterbacks. They have a guy who can do a lot, and that really, combined with these playmakers, really opens up what they can do.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I'm glad that you mentioned Gibson, who all of a sudden it looks like his stock is up after what was a dreadful preseason. And I was impressed with the play calling, Ben. In particular, play action was way up, which I was very happy to see.
Yeah, I think Scott Turner's been pretty creative in his first 2 years. I know he doesn't always get a ton of credit for a variety of reasons. You know, one, the numbers themselves have not been overly impressive. Again, I would say look at who he's had to work with, not just a quarterback, but also at the playmaker positions beyond Terry McLaurin and Antonio Gibson for the most part. I think Scott Turner's been pretty creative. Now, I will say throughout all this is they played the team this week that had the worst record in the league two consecutive years. Now, I think Jacksonville is an improved team. They have a new head coach in Doug Peterson, still a young quarterback in Trevor Lawrence. There's reasons to be optimistic for Jacksonville. I know this is not a Jacksonville podcast, but at the same point, they're not a good team. And Washington struggled to beat that team. Now, they scored touchdowns in their first two drives and then disappeared until Wentz's heroics at the end. So I do think, agree that Scott Turner did a pretty good job. And I think overall, there's reason to be pleasantly surprised and hopeful with what Washington did. But it's almost kind of a hard game to read as to what it really means longer term because of the opponent. Maybe even the same thing kind of going forward this week with the Lions, another team that's been at the bottom of the league several years. They had a robust showing offensively this past week against the Eagles. And if you watch Hard Knocks, I guess you could see where they may be headed in the right direction. But we'll see where Washington is. And that's what's still, it's fun what happened on Sunday. And at the same point, I still don't quite 100% know that they've truly turned a corner. At least we know now, especially with Scott Turner's play calling and the weapons he has, that they have the pieces to score points, which we could not have said for most of the last couple of years.
I'm going to ask you more about the Lions in a second, but before we get there, two more questions. Number one, do you think that this win has more to do with the Commanders being good or the Jaguars being bad? Do you have a gut feeling on that?
You know, like I said, it's probably a little bit of both. At least when things were starting to turn for Wentz, the back-to-back picks, his resiliency showed. I wrote about this the last week, talked to him one-on-one about his sort of upbringing, that he always kind of views himself as this underdog. You know, he's from North Dakota. That's not a state that develops NFL players. You know, he entered high school 5'8", dreaming of becoming at least 6 feet tall. Now he's 6'5", and he's been able to do all these things. And, you know, obviously the last couple of years have been a struggle for him. As we know, with, you know, the Eagles and the Colts both trading him after 1 year, or not after 1 year, but, you know, in back-to-back years, that he was able to rebound, because that would have been a disaster if he throws back-to-back picks and they lose at home to Jacksonville. At least he showed, hey, I'm going for this still. And that's the nature. That's his nature. He's a Brett Favre disciple. He's going to keep going for it. I think that to me was a good sign. So I don't know if we can say the game itself was like more them than the Jags, but for what Washington needed to see, I think it was really important to see Carson Wentz deliver. So to that extent, I'll say it was good for, you know, it was Washington's win more than Jacksonville's loss. But we'll see, you know, as we move forward here, they're playing, you know, some different and better teams.
Hey, what? Why not? Why not? Am I right? Why not? Why not?
A little
North Dakota semi-humor for you there. The injuries, right? Fedarian Mathis unfortunately goes down. Looks like he's going to be out for the season. Of course, Chase Young still isn't back, and D line is, you know, one of the strengths of this team. How do you think these injuries are going to affect the team moving forward?
Yeah. Well, look, I think my big issue with this team has been sort of the depth. I on my podcast when they went down to the 53 player limit, I was playing a bit with my guests about what's one word to describe the roster, and I went with the hyphenated top heavy, particularly on defense. I think their starting lineup is good enough, but once you start having to go into the depth, I think that's where things come into play, and this will be a good test right now. Losing Fedarian Mathis, who was, you know, both a short and a long-term play for them as their second-round pick, they're going to have to figure out how to give Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne some help inside, because that's a position you want to rotate, not keep those guys out there every play banging there against the offensive line. So I think that's going to be a challenge. And, Chase Young is out at least another three more games, probably a little bit more than that. So, yeah, their defensive line is going to get tested from a depth perspective. And like I said, you know, they only used two linebackers in the whole game against Jacksonville. They only used three cornerbacks the whole game as well. So I think they recognize their depth is limited. And, you know, if you can keep the injuries are going to happen, you just have to hope they don't happen at your biggest weaknesses and that they don't happen in just in total mass. But Mathis will be a loss for sure.
Next week in Detroit, right now, FanDuel has the Commanders getting 1.5 points. It's still 2.5 most everywhere else. Lions, as you mentioned earlier, lost week one in Philly, but they did put up 35 points. What are you expecting next week?
Yeah, I know. It's a good question. I think, the Lions ran for a ton against the Eagles, and that was probably Washington's defense biggest issue this game. Jacksonville averaged nearly 7 yards a carry. Probably fortunate for Washington. The Jags seemed to get away from that run in the second half. I think they're gonna have to be on their P's and Q's on the ground against DeAndre Swift. Beyond that, Detroit gave up 38 points to the Eagles. The Eagles ran for a ton themselves. Detroit's sort of like Jacksonville. They've been bad, but you think they're making strides. To what end, though, are those strides being made? I haven't had a chance to watch that Lions-Eagles game yet, but clearly they covered the spread. They kept it closer than people thought, and they had a nice rally themselves. It is at home. So I don't think this is going to be a pushover at all for Washington, considering, Detroit is a team that's had a worse record. Vegas agrees. The odds makers agree because they're making the Lions a favorite over Washington. So, I think it's going to be a really fun test as well. And like I said, if they can shore up the run defense and put this on Lions quarterback Jared Goff to beat them, I think that's going to be where their success comes from.
You want to guess what Carson Wentz's MVP odds are today?
Oh my Lord. No, I can't even, don't break my brain. I don't know. What are they?
They are 75-1 for Carson Wentz to win the MVP on FanDuel. That is the 20th shortest odds. It is just behind Jameis Winston and just ahead of Justin Fields. Safe to say, I don't think that one is going to work out this season, although we may be in for a wonderful Carson Wentz season. Us Commanders fans, speaking about me, I know you're unbiased. You cover the team. Me personally, the rest of us, we can hope.
I will say this, like the NFC, this feels like the NBA in recent years, where one conference is far more dominant than the other. And, there really were not a lot of NFC teams that were that exciting this year. And now Dallas loses Dak Prescott, at least for a few weeks. That opens up potentially a playoff spot if they really crater here, which I think a lot of people think they will. And, to the point of, I had Washington at 9-8. Could be 8-9, but had 9-8. If they somehow could make the playoffs and I'm not telling you to bet your house on Carson Wentz winning MVP. I'm just saying there is a world, because of the fact that the conference isn't that great and Washington should be better, Wentz would get a ton of credit, obviously, if they did get to the 10 wins or something. So, we'll see. I'm with you on the skepticism, but it's not like an impossibility, just a tiny one.
And to that point, just this morning, we're recording this on Tuesday, Football Outsiders, and our guy Aaron Schatz over there, they do playoff odds and they tweak it every week. They actually, this in between week one and week two and after the Dak injury, they bumped the Commanders' chances of making the playoffs by 10 percentage points. They're now sitting, according to Football Outsiders, at about 38%. I'll take it. Ben,
yeah,
where can listeners find you?
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm on The Athletic writing all the time. I have a podcast, Standig Room Only, you can find on iTunes or wherever you do your podcasting. Twitter at Ben Standig. And other than that, you know, don't, you know, leave me alone. No, I'm just kidding.
Ben Standig, senior writer for The Athletic, at Ben Standig on Twitter. An absolute must read for all things Commanders. And I mean that, and I follow through with that. Ben, thanks again for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me.
Read a great article last week titled Inside the Well-Funded Fight Over the Fantasy Football Consumer. And I said, man, I've got to get this reporter to come on. Mark Burns, senior reporter at Morning Consult. Good to have you, Mark.
Thanks so much for having me. Good to meet you.
In your article, you start out talking about how fantasy football was this geeky Star Trek thing in the 90s. Pro sports leagues were hesitant to embrace it because they thought it was too close to gambling. Then fast forward 20 years and Disney, ESPN, NBC Universal all count on it. They need it for revenue and for growth. What do you think changed leading to that embrace of fantasy sports?
I think a couple of things. I would say one, just the just its existence being around more and people becoming more educated with fantasy sports, fantasy football, and how the general consumer and general sports fan was actually interacting with this fan engagement type of medium. I think too, you know, there was a lot of debate years ago about whether fantasy sports, fantasy football was a game of skill, was it gambling? And to your point off the top, initially people thought it was gambling. So many people I talked to for this story, the lines were very muddied in the early days. If you mentioned fantasy sports to people, people just thought you were talking about sports betting or talking about, you know, placing a wager on a game. Where over time, it's been ruled that it's a game of skill. It's not necessarily gambling. And so I think people with the familiarity of it and learning more about it, plus that those types of decisions being made at like federal levels, people became more comfortable with it. And I would say third, just the land grab, the amount of money that is in fantasy sports, fantasy football, football obviously being the biggest sport in the U.S. with the NFL. It was tough, I think, for people to turn an eye to this and say, we don't want anything to do with it. You know, this is a great opportunity for us to engage our audience and to engage sports fans and try and tap into the general consumer.
Let's talk about that influx of money. Nowadays, ESPN, DraftKings with DFS, Yahoo, NFL.com, they're all kind of the big dogs in the fantasy space, as you write. But I was a little surprised to see your reporting about some of the funding these upstarts are bringing in. For instance, a company called Underdog Fantasy, $35 million Series B round of financing, valuing the company at $485 million. Sleeper raising $40 million. You mentioned Prize Picks, Thrive Fantasy. When did fantasy football become this big of a business?
I would say in the last probably decade or so, it started to become more of a business, certainly in the last 5 or 6 years or so. You saw the influx of cash from and marketing dollars being spent by the FanDuels and DraftKings of the world. This is 2015, 2016. I mean, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars. A company by the name of Prize Picks, they've gone through different iterations of their product. And they were kind of a first mover to like daily fantasy in a way back in 2013, 2014, a different company that since rebranded and now is called Prize Picks. You mentioned Underdog Fantasy, Sleeper. There's a company called, I mean, we all know Vivid Seats from a ticketing platform, but they acquired a company not too long ago called Betcha, and they rebranded this fantasy sports app to Vivid Picks, basically a player prop platform that they can also layer in their ticketing and e-commerce capabilities. So it's not only the fantasy side, but now you're kind of marketing, segmenting out and targeting sports fans and people that have actually bought a ticket through your platform. So it's grown massively. I think, and in my reporting, not to go too long-winded here, but in my reporting for this story, I I'll be honest, I don't play a lot of like season long fantasy. I used to back in high school, mid-2000s. And I truly did not realize the level at which people still played fantasy sports, both on the daily fantasy side, but on the traditional season long. It's impressive to see that this industry continues to grow, you know, two decades or so after its inception.
I have more fantasy football teams than I would care to admit, Mark. We talked about this a little bit already, but in your article, you predict, let me say, I want to make sure I get this quote right, a radical transformation of the industry, the fantasy football industry moving forward. How so?
I would say a couple things. One, I would say that you're seeing more players come into it. You mentioned a few of them off the top, Underdog Fantasy and Sleeper, the tradition, the more the legacy type players, your CBSs and ESPNs and your Yahoos. I would say you're going to see more of this type, these types of startups coming into the space, more money being devoted to this space. Two, I would say there's going to be more blurring of the lines between fantasy sports slash like fantasy football and betting, and kind of where, you know, companies that have fantasy football and fantasy sports users, you know, how they can also, if they have a betting component, how they maybe target people on in both sort of categories and what that looks like. I would say three and four, kind of two last points, and they're sort of connected, is having, especially on the football side, more fantasy football sort of like experts and analysts being part of NFL coverage. And I'll just give you an example, like Matthew Berry, who we all know in the fantasy world, he just moved from ESPN to NBC. He's a huge part of their football coverage, not just fantasy coverage.
He's on, sorry to interrupt, he was on Sunday Night Football, the actual game broadcast.
Yes. And I think he's the first fantasy sports analyst that has really been part of a national broadcast in that way, a front-facing personality, if you will. And I think you're maybe going to see more of that. There's certainly no shortage of experts in this space. And I would say to that point, you're going to see, I think, more on-screen integration in terms of fantasy football. We're already seeing it now, I think, with fantasy football, but also with betting. You're seeing lines and graphics on screen. You're seeing broadcasters sometimes tease, you know, an over and an under in a game, more on like maybe the betting side. So I think that's going to become more part of the viewership experience, and is seeing these numbers, seeing analysts and broadcasters talk about these sort of things on the fantasy side, but also on betting.
Mark, really enjoyed this chat. Love to have you back on in the future. You do some great sports business stuff. After I saw this article, I started looking around at your other work. You do great stuff, man. Where can listeners find you?
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And great talking with you. I'm on Twitter, Mark J. Burns 88. Twitter, Instagram, you can find me there, and go to morningconsult.com and find all my work on our website too.
Mark Burns, Morning Consult. Please wish me luck with my many, many, many fantasy teams this weekend. Have a good one, man.
You too. Thanks so much.
There it is, ladies and gents. Thanks to Andy, Ben, and Mark. Producer Parrish was on vacation this week. We'll be back next Wednesday. Got Kevin Cole of Pro Football Focus doing our main segment. Pumped about that. You guys know I love having Kevin on, and we'll see what else we throw in there between now and then. A couple of strong possibilities, but I haven't gotten the confirmation yet, so I don't like to put stuff out here until I have the confirmation. Also, my throw-in pick from last week that I'm now going to throw into this section, it lost. It was a big loser and a frustrating one at that. I had Broncos -6.5 in Seattle. They stunk. They were awful. However, I think I have a better one for this week. At halftime of the Cowboys Sunday Nighter against the Bucks, I was like, these guys are awful. Let's see what their current line is for next week against the Bengals, who also lost on Sunday. And at that time, so halftime of the Sunday Nighter, I took the Bengals money line at +116. For this coming week against the Cowboys. The Dak injury happened after that. Sorry to say, you never want to see anyone get injured, but if you were to take the money line now, it would be -320. The Cincinnati money line over the Cowboys would be -320. We've got it at +116. Not bad. So that's my bet for this section for this week. If I lose that one, you're going to hear me complain. I promise you that. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing. IG at Rambling and Gambling, and the old email, ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Everybody, have a great week.